view.
That's a Catholic view.
Cynthia, this is the only cup that's upside down.
Well, we found a couple more.
Oh, were there a couple
yeah,
more?
Yeah, we found three all together.
Oh.
And Andrew called them out. They're over there somewhere or another.
Okay.
I've got one, Cynthia.
You got an upside down one, too?
That's a special cup.
Do you have any more that are...
I just looked at the one that you signed. You happen to have some upside down.
Well,
I didn't look at the other four, but I'm okay with it.
Well, no, because you can put it back, because I'm gonna collect the ones that were defective and you know, and talk to somebody about it. So you can swap it out for a...
But you signed it. I'm really not giving it back.
The symbolism of the upside down pages is really incredible.
Stand on your head to read it, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'll have to look at the 50 we have at our house.
Yeah, yeah, it's worth it. Yeah, there's Rebecca. All right, well, let's get going. Where's Andrew? God only knows where Andrew is.
He's walking down another.
He'll pop up, yeah. So I wanna play by the map of the ray of creation just for three quarters of an hour or so before lunchtime. And it's a more complex map, but it's got some extremely interesting features from the perspective of what we've been looking at in terms of exchange of energy between the realms. And it really is essential in some ways to begin to understand the exchange of energies between the realms to do this. So if you can bear with me and bear with a little bit of technical difficulty, one of the nice things, if you've gotten a copy of the book by now, is that we got the diagrams in here, thanks to Andrew, that Andrew got hired by Shambhala to actually do the diagrams, because I could see that they were not going to be able to comprehend things. So I said, you know, Andrew could do this because he not only is a good visual artist by profession, but he understands the material and he's not going to screw it up. So Andrew proceeded to contribute like five or six exquisite diagrams to the thing. That his pièce de résistance is my Babette's Feast in chiastic form, which is just intricate. He got the whole thing in there within the space limitations of the thing. So anyway, on the classic working one is on like page 29. Yeah, not reading too bad with my bubbleless eye. That will help you follow along the language. So the whole idea, the ray of creation, is Gurdjieff's own nomenclature for the great chain of being. And it looks on the surface to be a classic redshift great chain of being map. And we'll be looking tomorrow at why it isn't, why it actually depicts exactly how energy gets handed up along the ray of creation, not just down, that entropy is not the bottom line, but that some sort of a counter-entropic principle or feeding is built into the system subtly, so the whole thing gets nourished. We'll look at that more tomorrow. But for now, we got to just do the basics of getting you familiar with the map, and then we can begin to fine-tune it. So the classic great chain of being maps, you know, if you look at them in the Sufi worlds or any kinds of worlds, essentially go out from that, you know, that world one, that holy absolute, that, and send it out in increasingly dense worlds along a chain. And depending on what tradition you get working in, they get calls, they get named differently. Lynn Bauman, if you've ever seen some of his maps of that, essentially gives them their classic kind of Islamic names of the holy absolute, the logoic realm, the archangelic realm, the imaginal realm, the earth realm, and the lunar realm. So, and they get even more intricately named in some of the maps that come from the great schools of traditionalism of René Guénon and others. So it's basically that map. But Gurdjieff puts a couple of very interesting modifications on it. And the modifications are these three. First of all, the realms, as they're named, are not named according to these great sort of philosophical spiritual models. It's not the archangelic realm, the moon, the imaginal realm there, the logoic realm, whatever that is. They are recognizable members of the solar system. And by solar system, I mean solar system writ large. They have, very, very soon you can begin to bring it right down to our solar system. So the whole thing has a here and now and material kind of flavor to it. As a matter of fact, Gurdjieff made everybody mad by saying everything in the universe is material. Not spiritual, like Mary Baker Eddy and the Christian Scientists, but everything, even God, he says, is material, means it's composed of something. And so he preferred to start with materiality and work up rather than start with spirit and reach a point where all of a sudden spirit drops out and we're just material. So there's a physicality to this that's really, really an interesting physicality. So we're actually going to see that we're naming known compartments, known parts of our visible celestial environment. And that this is not just for metaphoric principles. It's that when we talk about exchange between the realms, there is a relationship between these classic, more subtle kingdoms and actually what you see spread out in the laws of in the actual cosmological maps. You can believe it or not believe it, but this is the shorthand we're going to be working with, and we'll find it either useful or unuseful. So that's the first feature to call attention to. Second, you're going to discover that the map that he's using, the names of the planets, the names of the cosmoses, as you start to work with them, in the original Latin, will replicate the names which we now know as the tones, the notes of the scale. Do a deer, a female deer, ray, a drop of golden sun, and I'm going to show you how that works. So in other words, that as you proceed along the ray of creation and with these various component members actually named, you are actually replicating in some way a musical scale. And I'm going to unpack all this because it's hugely portentous. And the third thing that he works in is the law of seven. And he says that the American Western diatonic musical scale actually preserves in musical form a inner arcanum, a history. It's an algorithm of the law of seven. The law of the seven being the law of progress and progression once you get into form. So these are three really astonishing notions that he makes about claims that he makes in the Ray of Creation. And when you begin to understand what's at stake in each one of them, you'll begin to see how powerfully fertile this ground is. So first of all, let's just look at the names as they're named. And yes, we'll see that if you turn to Andrew's composite map, which is toward the end of that chapter, on page 40, that there is a correlation between the worlds that we've just played through, world 1, 2, 1, 3, 5, 6, 12, 24, 48, and the planets in the ray of creation. And we'll go back and pass through that too. So they're different, what the architects would call elevations. In other words, there are different ways of describing and picturing the same commodity. So, to play down the ray of creation, we're gonna do it in descending order first. Do stands for Dominus, and Dominus is world one, holy, the absolute. Dominus means Lord, the absolute, the undivisible, the mighty. The next world down is C, and that in the Gurdjieffian, well, in Latin, that is Siderum, and that stands for all stars. In other words, what we're talking about in that one, that will correspond roughly, for reasons that won't be apparent to you, quite now. It stands for all the potential cosmoses out there, all the starry galaxies, all the heavens. The next one down, the next note, La, which corresponds essentially to Lactera. And does anybody know what Lactera means?
Milk.
Milk, yeah. It stands for the Milky Way. And so the Lactera is essentially our galaxy. You know, our collection of stars, you know, planets, the whole kind of thing that you see at the night, and it looks as deliciously white. You know, this is the one that we're, this is our neighborhood, intergalactically speaking. Sol, moving down, is the sun, our sun. And we're beginning to move into our solar system. This corresponds with world 12. Fa is Fatum, which stands for fate. And what that means in the classic cosmic solfeggio is, remember astrology? That the planets and the suns that you get born under sort of determines your fate? It is not in the stars, but in ourselves that we are underlings, you know. But the classic wisdom that comes from the earlier sciences, that something in the constellation of the stars and planets when we're born controls a kind of higher destiny than just what we shuffle with on Earth. So, Fatum, Fa, for short, refers to our planetary system. In this particular shorthand, you know, all the planets of our particular little family, Mercury, Venus, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, the thing you used to make scale models of when you were in elementary school. Then Mi is short for Mixtus Orbis, which means mixed world, or if you want to call it that, mixed up world. It's our planet. It's the Earth. And the great philosophers, the ancients, always called our planet a mixtus orbis. It's a mixed place. And I think it's very clear to me, at any rate, that it's mixed because to work well, it's right at the junction between world 24, the imaginal world, and world 48, which is its physical stuff, right at the junction between radial energy and tangential energy. And one of the things that makes our particular planet so frustrating and yet so impelling is that we really can and do live inescapably in two worlds at once. And any attempt whatsoever to shortchange either one or the other results in an impoverishment of human being. If we act like it's just material and there's no spiritual, you know, what, how's it go? We are living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Woo! But if we try to live it that way, it doesn't work. Our souls get sick and die. Because we know that who we are is not...
Could you do that one more time?
You get the recording. Yeah, da, 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 da.
Well, now it's coming.
Jimmy and I will work it out in Channel 10, Town Landing the last day. In which I dive into the water and disappear. So anyway, we all know, and of course, Carl Jung famously said that basically all psychological disorder and malaise and unhappiness that he saw on the planet really, for him, stemmed from a spiritual sickness, from a suppression and a repression in us of this deeply spiritual nature and yearning of the human being. Mm-hmm. So the attempts to just sort of live in world 48, and I think that really is at the height and at the heart of of liberal malaise at this point, because what we've really tried to do is to drag down the world 24 nature of our religion, of our soul, into world 48 norms, and it just doesn't work. And we're not getting energy, and we're not giving energy. But on the other hand, the ability, you know, the continued efforts on so much of spiritual practice, just to disregard the material world, it's a booster rocket, have done with it, boom. You know, and whether it's Christian Science, as we learned to intone as a child, man is not material, he is spiritual. Or whether it's, you know, hopping off to a monastery to destroy your body and save your soul. It doesn't work. And nobody has ever been able, even in a good incarnational religion like Christianity, to talk about why this dimension of our physical, enfleshed, slow, boring, frustrating, tangential, energy, radial, dualistic plague is somehow essential to the whole bit. But mixtus orbis must be embraced in all of its complexity. Down below it is Ray, the moon, Regina Celis. And that, as we're going to look at tomorrow in Gurdjieff's wonderfully fanciful cosmological map, is the younger and the unwanted child of the Earth, created in a cosmic calamity, and very unstable, and putting the whole thing, the whole ray, in jeopardy because of its instability. And so the whole cosmos, the whole ray, is in some sense invested in building up and stabilizing the moon. This will have, I will unpack that more tomorrow, but it corresponds to World 96. And when you talk about people coming under lunar influences, we talk about them losing more and more of their free will and ability to make rational choices, falling more and more under the sway of forces. And World 192 on this map would be the dough of the next, you know, the completing devolving dough, you know, the next octave down into insentiency. So that's how it corresponds. Gurdjieff did not invent that soplesio. When we got the names of the scales, you know, and when spiritual teachers taught you, do, dear, if you were with your musical teachers, you know, the only difference, you know, those of us who are in the West may say, it's not C, it's T. Do, re, mi, fa, so, ti, la, ti, do, right? T tea, I drink with jam and bread. But in all the other solfeggios around the world, except for the West, the note is C. And the names of the planets are actually derived from these. There's two models. One that's ascribed to an old medieval monk named Guigo, who wrote a hymn called Uquea Loxis, and some people say that his names of the scale come from that. But the greater body of law wisdom says that this basically originated in that wonderful interface between Arabic geometry and Spanish, philosophy, and that the solfeggio, the cosmic solfeggio, where the names of the planets and the notes of the scale are deliberately matched, is part of that, greater, what you might call wider Islamic Platonic knowledge as it came west into Europe. So it comes with a venerable history to it. But what Gurdjieff then went on to claim is that all of the musical scales, whatever ones you talk about, pentatonic, Dorian, the modes and the palates, all reflect certain cosmic teachings and cosmic truths. And what Gurdjieff claimed is that our modern scale that was so immortalized by, the Sound of Music, essentially is a musical version. It's a mnemonic device pointing to the law of seven and showing you how to work its intervals. Now, if you can stand to go back to your early days struggling to learn the piano, this is actually important. This is cosmically important. And remember how you learned there were half steps and whole steps? And they showed it to you on a piano where that they said that a whole step has got a black key between them, but there are little places in the scale where you don't have a black key between them, like between E and F and then between B and C on the notes, or to put it in solfège, between Mi and Fa and between C and Do. So the scale goes da da do re mi fa, and you'll discover you may not be able to pick this up unless you've got a trained musical ear, but the interval, the amount of space between the mi and the fa, is a little bit less than between the do and the re. It's a little bit tighter. A little bit closer. And one of the ways you can kind of play with this these little tight octaves or these tight passages. The energy is the interval is closer together. And for Gurdjieff, this was the heart of the teaching in the Law of Seven. And this becomes actually totally practically important. to how we move, that Gurdjieff called these two places shock points, and that his whole theory on the law of seven, or the law of world maintenance, is that energy doesn't flow out from the source, from that original Big Bang, in a smooth, consistent ray, like a series of seven whole steps. There are two places, and they always come in the same place in the progression, where the interval is tighter or closer, or to envision that in another way, there's a hesitation or a break in the energy, a little bit less. And unless you're very alert at those places and feed in a different kind of energy, what will happen is it tends to veer off in an opposite direction. And so these two places where this can happen are at Mi Fa and at Si Do. And the practical implication of this is that you see it over and over and over again in groups. That you start, let's say you start a new organization, you start a new thing, you get it, you do your dough, you get it started, you're charismatic founder, it goes. You go to Ray, you get a bunch of people interested, you start the school, you go to me, it really starts rolling, people start responding. And then the next thing is Fa. And what is needed there at that tiny little step is a very, very intelligent way of going across, which requires, in a sense, a return to the initial infusion and a repurification and a reclaiming and a rebirthing of it. Every institution under the sun makes the wrong turn here and says, okay, we got a good thing going, let's get heavy, let's build a structure, let's hire more people, let's develop a bureaucracy. And at that point, it veers off in the wrong direction. It becomes an institution whose goal is self-maintenance. We were just talking out in the parking lot about, you know, as people were getting back, about the Center for Action and Contemplation has just muffed that passage, you know. And so instead of getting to Fa, what they do is go Do Re Mi again, Do Re Mi again, Do Re Mi. So at these places, these two places that are shock points, a different kind of energy has to come in, a different kind of, which is finer, not bigger and gross, not more of the same, alert and subtle. And if you're alert enough to see that, you can perhaps head it off the path. If you're not, Gurdjieff could draw the map how within three turns, basically, an organization could wind up going 180 degrees from its founding principles and still think it was fulfilling its original thing. He said, this is how we got from Jesus to the Inquisition, you know. And you can look at this, our country. This is how we got from love and democracy to whatever we are today, claiming that what we're doing is restoring love and democracy. I mean, it's... But it's part of the law of seven that unless a certain kind of conscious shock, as Gurdjieff calls it, is brought at exactly these points, the whole thing will start going off in a different direction, not even knowing it's doing it. And the law of seven became so important that, and one of the places where this interfaces with some of the work that's going on in the popular culture now, is that Gurdjieff, borrowing, you know, or learning teaching that he'd probably gotten in Central Asia, brought to the West in the 1920s the symbol of the Enneagram, you know, the nine-pointed thing that has the triangle inside and then this sort of thing that looks like grasshopper legs around the outside, which is the visual depiction of the intersection of the law of three, the law of world creation, world three, and the law of seven, the law of how things go once they get into time. And right at the places where these two lines intersect are the opportunities, if you really know how to read the inner mystery of the Enneagram, for tremendous conscious redirection of things. So people have been begun now, as they've gotten over their fixation on what type am I, to see how the Enneagram is really talking about the relationship between, you know, creation and maintenance. To move back into the scale at hand, what this actually says is that it's at two points where some different kind of energy is needed. And one comes between C and Do. And what the maps have said, and you'll understand more of this tomorrow when I really start taking apart the map and looking at the exchange, is that the energy needed to get across that gap, which is almost at the end of things, or at the beginning of it, is provided by Do itself. Okay. So on the outward journey, there's such momentum that it sends you right past that. On the return journey, the Do is already calling, and it sucks you across. Like Jesus giving the hand to Peter, walking on the water and whipping him into the boat when he's sinking. But the other place where the energy, where it's needed, is the me, Fa, between me and Fa. And we're going to see that very interestingly, to come back to the cosmic map, and you remember how we aligned the worlds, me, Fa, runs right between world 48 and world 24, right? Remember that? Did you all follow that, or did I leave some of you behind? Because this is super important, and we got to take it over. Mixtus Orbis, world 48, Earth, us, is world 48. We are me. And if things are going to be handed back up the ray of creation, as we're going to look at, the imaginal is Fa. And that suggests really strongly that running right across this bandwidth between me and Fa lies this necessity for conscious shock. And that this is quite intentional. And we're going to see tomorrow that it works in two directions at once, going down and coming up. But if there is an energetic exchange, which for the moment, let's imagine, begins in Do, the Holy Absolute, comes all the way down to Re, you know, in a sense, sending from the inscrutable love of the higher realms, a food, a blessing for this realm. It's going to hit a hesitation point between Fa and me, where something has to be provided to get it across. And on the other hand, if we are building up, and if there's something down here in these lower realms that is of crucial importance to the upper realms, and not only just to the upper realms, but to the stabilization of the whole system. Something has to be furnished here that's not a heavier energy, but of a different quality of consciousness and attention, or otherwise it can't get through the gate, and it just keeps going around like a washing machine. Do, re, mi, do, re, mi, do, re, mi, do, re, mi. Jakob Burba said, good tears down what evil builds up, evil tears down what good builds up, and it's all another vain carving in the great laboriousness of man. It's because you can't get through it, the Bifa passage. Buddy.
Is there a vibe, you talk in terms of energy and the transference from 24-48, mm-hmm. Is there a vibrational correlation to that?
Oh yeah. And I'm not enough of a nerd to know what it is, but exactly. Exactly. When we're talking about the way in which these exchanges happen, it's all vibrational. You know, nothing happens by saying, I think of faith and I'm going to send faith into the higher dimension. What you're sending into the higher dimension is a word. You know, until it really hits the vibrational note, which is partially why this three-brained awareness thing.
Yes.
You know, words themselves won't convey. They're me. They don't get beyond me. That until they receive the enhancement of this boost, and we're going to be looking exactly what it is, but it is indeed vibrational. And it has everything to do with the fact that this Mipha conscious shock point is also the intersection between radial energy, or psychic energy as Tomberg called it, and tangential energy. In other words, it's a finer degree, it's a finer vibration of something that gets handed up. So, to say a couple of things about these shock points, particularly about this Mipha shock point, we're not going to be talking an awful lot about Cdo here, because I think we can once again trust that it sort of tends itself. But the Mipha shock point has everything to do with what we're here for, what's missing, and how we work in both directions. That somehow or another, our world cannot survive. Mixtus Orbis cannot survive as other than a great intertidal zone with the imaginal, in which there's a conscious, continuous transfusion of elements, handing up, handing down. And we're going to take this apart chapter and verse in, you know, what will essentially be new teaching, I think, to all of you tomorrow. But that's what it happens. And when that gets stopped because it's not being fulfilled consciously, it gets fulfilled unconsciously, and other things happen. There's a great opportunity to really give back. And my increasing conviction as I've studied this thing is that it's exactly at this point that our contribution, potential contribution as human beings, really concentrates the first conscious shock, as it's called, and in a way that I'm going to explore tomorrow, converting the tangential energy which runs our world, you know, the planets, the you know, the conveyor belts, the computers, the converting that into radial energy. We begin to reverse the redshift nature of the great chain of being. Gurdjieff's whole thing, as we're going to see tomorrow, is that there's something in the whole cycle of it that actually becomes counter-entropic. Teilhard was saying the same thing in different language when he said that evolution was counter-entropic. That something was being handed back that stabilized the whole system. And it basically has everything to do with the fruits of the spirit and how we tease the energy of ultimate value out of the surfaces of things, just like we tease a flame out of a candle and a wick. So it's a very, very important calling, and we're perfectly situated to do it. So the Gurdjieff map, by, you know, if you take this wonderful kind of overlay of our whole solar system, first of all, he's saying with that let's not sort of imagine spiritual realms piled up on top of material realms. Let's just say that this whole thing, with all its realms, with all its densities, with all its materialities, with all its planets, is the heart of God manifesting itself. Let's just say that, and let's say that it's all here. There's never a point where you leave the physical realm behind and go off into spiritual worlds. That's a myth that died with Einstein. That we're dealing with subtler and subtler vibrational gradients. And dense is not necessarily bad. Density contributes quite a bit to the whole thing, as we're going to look at. But it all needs to be in conjunction with each other. And to this funny little mixtus orbis on the intertidal zone with the imaginal realm is a place where exchange between the realms can happen with extraordinary intensity in both receiving and returning. And its purposes are not finally private. It's not so I get to go to heaven. It's for the collective maintenance and stabilization of the whole vast system by which the world one is able to extend outward the majesty of what lies hidden in this ever-inaccessible latency, you know, by which anything becomes visible. And we have a small but very key place role to play in that. And when we lose track of that role or lose confidence in that role, the whole system, the megalocosmos, as Gurdjieff called it, worlds and worlds within worlds within worlds, gets thrown off course, subtly destabilized. It can all play out automatically, but if it plays out consciously, everything gains. And we're going to look at why that is tomorrow. But it's a kind of mythological way. You can see then why the ray of creation, it looks on the surface like another redshift map. But the fact that it overlays with the law of seven as depicted in the musical scale gives you, if you know how to look at it, these two places where you can see that it's all about exchanging energy between realms in usable things, and that in the strength of this exchange, something is created that stabilizes collectively way bigger pieces than we're thinking of at this scale. It also encourages us, and I think this is really important as well, to not just be thinking, when we're thinking about the health of the planet, we shouldn't just be thinking about our planet. You know, we're beginning to learn it's a self-specifying system. But if you take the megalocosmos, you can't just stop there. Mm-hmm. Because in a kind of funny way, the cosmoses are interchange in this physical, energetic, intentional consciousness way, always sort of overlaying, to talk about substances being offered to us right from what once upon a time we used to call spiritual worlds, but which are necessary physically to the nurturance of our being. But unless a certain kind of fineness of attention is maintained, it all wanders off in the wrong direction and we can't do it anymore. So I think this is the tremendous opportunity there that's there at the world. If we just take these complicated maps and say, here at MIFA, we are in compulsory, obligatory relationship with the imaginal reality, whether we want to or not, because we straddle the MIFA passage. Our work as citizens granted with self-reflective intelligence and great yearning hearts is to engage in that work for the benefit of all worlds. And only in that conscious engagement do we find both our personal destiny and our collective nobility. So we will unpack the pieces of that tomorrow. What I want to do tomorrow is to start to talk about the exchange itself. What goes on here at Mifah? What's the exchange look like? What's handed up? What's handed down? How did they look like? I want to take you a little bit through Gurdjieff's creation myth, which is original and unusual, and like all creation myths, it's half myth and half truth, you know, or 100% myth and 100% truth. But it's an attempt to language what's going on and why this is so crucial to the stability of all. So we'll start with that. We'll look at the exchange, and we'll ask those very sort of American questions. What's in it for me? And what's in it for God? So we'll see if we can get tomorrow a firmer job description of what it is that we are actually being called to do and engaged to do by understanding exchange a little bit more deeply. So this afternoon then, just to replay how that's going to work, at 3 o'clock, from 3 to 5, I will be down at the dry dock signing books. We discovered to our horror that a certain number of books in the pile were printed with a section upside down, yours too. And anybody who wants to exchange their book can do so, then I will take them back if you have a defective book that some people have elected to keep them because they think they're charming, but I will deal with those for anyone who wants to swap them. Well, I'll be down there selling the remainder of the caseload. And 3 o'clock, Andrew will be leading you in the web exercise. And following that here, that Heather and Andrew will begin to initiate some work with basic movements, positions, and some simple movements. When that runs out of steam, you can all come up to dry dock, or you can come up in bits and pieces during that. We've set it up. It's okay today to come and drift. I'd like to have a sort of small, steady stream of people showing up between 3 and 5. Then you're good. 7:30, we're going to come back here and begin to work on the parabola article. How many of you had a chance to read it in advance or to catch up with it? Good, most of you. Excellent. And I can fudge from there. That's just out in the new parabola, the issue called balance. And it's by Llewellyn von Lee, who is one of the beloved Sufi teachers, you know, a friend of mine, and just a good, sweet, balanced guy out in Northern California. And I think he starts by laying down a real harmonious case. In some of our afternoon and evening sessions, I really want to get tightly focused on, so what does this have to do with our response to the pandemic that we're facing? So this will be the first step in that exposition. And we're going to look at some of the things that he says about balance and not demonizing viruses and understanding the extent of our sense of the self-imposed alienation from the biosphere in which we live. So we're going to be, we'll be looking at that. I'm not entirely happy about where he took it, because he takes it in the usual direction of, well, let's just get out in nature and have nice, pleasant experiences. You can actually do a lot more gutsball things with that, but I think it's a good, safe starting place. So we'll talk about that a little. Then there'll be questions, comments, reflections on the day's work. So back here at 7:30, tonight. Does everybody know what the available eateries are, both for lunch and for dinner? Yeah. You know, Harbor Cafe is open tonight, today and tonight. We'll give you your classic, really good local main stuff. Seafood featured, but, you know, other stuff available. Finn and Fern is just down the bottom of this hill. It is lovely dinners. You can get takeout of various kinds at both Stonecutters and across the street at Rod Watson's Stonington Ice Cream Factory. Imaginative cooking. So those are options. Or some of you are cooking at home. So if anybody wants any assistance in setting up dates or things like that, or anybody wants to invite me to any of their parties, just let me know what you're thinking about.
You are a material girl.
But Andrew, did you have anything that is occurring to you as a piece that you might play to send us out before we go? Did anything?
No.
Okay. Well, then we'll just go at this point. You can think about how we begin to collect the afternoon. You might want to start by playing something there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we're not back here until 7:30.
Well, no, you're back here for three. For three. For and. Try to participate as you can. I know that a lot of people say, oh, it's the teaching you want, but what goes on in these exercises is absolutely essential to getting this out of the bandwidth of concepts. Mm-hmm. The concepts will take you sort of like 60% of the way, but the other 40% can only be gone in your body. So you know, don't cheat on it if you don't absolutely have to. And I, unfortunately, absolutely have to. So we'll see some of you at dry dock between 3 and 5, and I'll see you again at 7:30. So. Thank you. I hope that wasn't too much of a push from the morning. It'll relax. But thank you for your attention.
Cynthia, is it okay to leave stuff here?
I would think so. We'll lock up, and the key lives on the Caribbean or lock right on the side of the building on the corner down on this end. And I would say that let's follow the protocol of the last person out locks the door and puts the key where it goes. Do not put the key in your pocket.
Where does the key go? There's a.
It's if you outside. If you go right around the outside of the building, right at the corner there. There's a gutter pipe going down, and right at sort of waist level, is a carabiner thing with a set of keys, two keys on it. That's where it goes. So it's the bigger brown key. So we will lock up the building, but if you need to get in, and if you're going to stay here, unlock it. So stuff can stay there. I want to keep it safe for the Methodists who've given us a berth while still making it easy for all of you.
Is dry dock walkable?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's all the way to my house. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's only like 20 steps beyond your hotel room.
It's almost across from the way Voices.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see y'all later. And you want to?
I would like to exchange it. It's a little dizzy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a little dizzy.